Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for hanging out and chilling out with me today on this lovely Friday the 13th, people. Dun, dun, dun. It is Friday the 13th, and you're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you once again for hanging out with me on this lovely, sunny Friday morning. Hope it's nice and bright and sunny where you are, too. And, of course, wherever you are, you can call in here. You can call in here at 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620, and, of course, as always, for your convenience, the chat room is open if you would like to go that route. But we've got, of course, as always, a ton of stuff to get to. Yet another busy week in the realm of politics and all things political. So let's get started. We got, like I said, we got all kinds of, I have got such a big honking stack of stuff here. I'm going to try to get to all of it. But let's see, where should I start? Well, let's start with bathroom wars, shall we? Yes, we can do that. We can start with the bathroom, the ongoing saga of the bathroom wars. Okay, if for anyone who has been not paying attention or living under a rock or whatever you've been doing, actually paying attention to your life, the governor of North Carolina back in March, I believe it was, in fact, I probably have it. Yes, it is. Back in March, North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory signed a bill into law that says in North Carolina that you must, if you are going to use a restroom, you must use the restroom in accordance with the gender that is on your birth certificate. Therefore, if you were born a female, you must use the women's restroom. If you were born a male, you must use the men's restroom. Pretty straightforward. Pretty much a no-brainer. But age of transgenderism and things of that nature, people who are making a choice about which gender they want to live their life as, some people don't like that, and there are plenty of people who are plenty of men who have decided that they are more comfortable living as a woman. Now, whether or not they go all the way, as we, and since this is a family show and it is 11 o'clock Central Time right here right now, I'll try to clean it up a little bit. There are plenty of men who prefer to feel more comfortable. They prefer to live their life as a woman. This may be, I think for the most part, and I'm certainly no expert. You know what? If you are a transgender person, please feel free to call me and talk to me, because I know that as someone who is part of a group of people that gets misunderstood a lot, I absolutely welcome questions. So please do. But you are a man who is more comfortable, feels more like themselves, and you are well. Let's just say you're pre-op. You haven't gone all the way. You haven't well, you haven't had any body parts removed. That still makes you biologically a dude. And so there are a lot of people who are saying, you know what? Well, the transgender people say, hey, you know what? We are this is who we are. We are not we're not the people that it says on our birth certificate. We're not male or we're not female. We're the other one, and so we have the right to go use a restroom and not feel discriminated against or any type of bias or anything like that. Now on the other side, people who say, well, you know, why is it so hard to how you dress and how you live your life does not make you biologically, you know, one could argue pre-op, post-op. I think it's a whole nother argument. And, you know, this is a really, it's a weird topic for me, but I'll finish my thought. There are traditional people here who are saying, you know what, this is really kind of a no-brainer for us. If you were born biologically female, it doesn't matter what you're wearing, what kind of clothes you're wearing that day. It doesn't matter how you're styling your hair, whether or not you're wearing makeup. Those outward cosmetic things don't make you biologically a woman. Or if you have shorter hair, if you have done some sort of therapy in order, you know, taking male hormones to enhance your facial hair or something of those lines. If you're a female that wants to transition to a male is what I'm getting at. Just because you do those things, you are not biologically a male. You were not born genetically and biologically a male. And the other argument that is coming into this is people who have children that say, you know what, this is leaving, it's leaving the restroom door wide open to people who can say that they are transgender people, but what if they're not? What if they are, and you know, I have to wonder, again, I would like to know someone in the transgender community, I would like to know their opinion on this, because I'm going to give a hypothetical here. Let's say you're someone who is a predator of children, and you want to go into the restroom of the opposite sex that you are, dressed as someone of the opposite sex, but you're not going in there for the intended purposes of the transgender community. You are going in there as a sexual predator of children, and you're going in there to molest someone. There are plenty of people on the traditional side of this who are parents who say, you know what, I'm not comfortable with a guy, a grown man, a grown-ass man, going into the ladies' room in a stall next to my 10-year-old daughter. I don't care who he is. I don't care what he's dressed as. I'm not comfortable with that. And what it seems to me, and I can only speak, you know, thinking of how I would feel maybe and what I might do if I were part of the transgender community. Those people, those sexual predators and the people who are hijacking my cause are making me look bad, because there's no one, certainly not me, no one is saying that every transgendered person is going into the restroom opposite of the gender they were born as to molest children, be it little girls, little boys, whatever it is. Nobody's saying that all those people, that is their ultimate goal, that is their ultimate objective. Of course not. But there are people who are going to do it. There's already been documented cases of it. And so as parents, people are saying, look, I don't want these predators next to my kid. And I got to say, I'm not a parent. Well, I'm a furry parent. I'm the parent of a furry child. But if I was the parent of a child, I don't know. I think I would have to have the same concerns and the same, because I think it is valid. But today, in light of all of that, today, the Obama administration ordered every public school district in the nation, in the United States, to allow transgender students to use the restroom that matched the gender identity they have chosen. This is a report from Newsmax, and I think that this information is in part from the New York Times. The quote here is from Education Secretary John King Jr. He gave the New York Times a statement late Thursday. Quote, no student should ever have to go through the experience of feeling unwelcome at school or on a college campus, unquote. He went on to say, we must ensure that our young people know that whoever they are or wherever they come from, they have the opportunity to get a great education in an environment free from discrimination, harassment, and violence, unquote. Again, he went on, this is also from a statement from Attorney General Loretta Lynch that accompanied this directive that went out today. Quote, there is no room in our schools for discrimination of any kind, including discrimination against transgender students on the basis of their sex. Again, that is from Attorney General Loretta Lynch. This order was signed by the Education and Justice Departments. It describes what school districts should do to ensure that no students are discriminated against. It does not have the force of a law, but carries an implicit threat that the schools that do not abide by King Barack's edict here, his decree from on high, that they, if they do not abide by the Obama administration's interpretation of the law, they could face either lawsuits or, of course, there's always that great equalizer, the loss of federal aid. And we've seen that tactic has been used time and time again. Every administration uses it, but it seems that Democrat administrations are especially especially near and dear to them, because for anybody who's old enough to remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, when there was a push to make for a national speed limit, national interstate highway speed limit, and that limit was 55 miles an hour, a lot of states didn't want to do that, and they tried to push back, and when they did, the federal government just said, well, if you're not going to do that, then we're going to withhold federal highway money for you, which means that you don't get roads fixed, you don't get potholes fixed, things of that nature. So, you know, if all else fails, threaten loss of money. But, and again, this comes amid the administration's battle over the North Carolina law, over North Carolina transgender rights, and is most likely to renew attacks by Republicans. The White House is involving itself in state issues, which I think the opinion of most Republicans, most conservatives is yes, that's what is going on here. But earlier this week, the Justice Department sued North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory and the state of North Carolina over this bill that he signed in March, and he countersued and said basically that the federal government has no business involving itself in what amounts to a state's rights issue. And there is a quote here from in North Carolina, the law requires transgender people to use the public restroom matching the sex on their birth certificate. But the ordinance only applies to schools, universities, government buildings, and highway rest stops. The quote from Governor McCrory here is, quote, we didn't think there was a problem at all until the Democrats brought this up in Charlotte. McCrory is a first-term Republican. By all accounts, he is a popular governor. He told Jake Tapper, CNN's Jake Tapper, on Wednesday, quote, we didn't need a bathroom law. We never have asked for a bathroom law. The president is, and Attorney General Loretta Lynch, I think, is equating this. There's some weird equating of it to the civil rights movement of the 60s, and it in no way, shape, or form is like that. And that's a whole other topic. But you know, it's. Yeah, I have to agree and say that I think that there is something to the argument that this could be a states' rights issue. Of course, no one wants no one wants to discriminate against people in schools, whether it be grade school, because we know this is going on. There's children as young as grade school level who are being indoctrinated. I think there's that. That's the only word that you can use: indoctrinated into believing that they can choose which gender they are. And there are parents who are going along with this, and that is totally a whole nother topic. But I believe I saw this morning that already the state of Texas is about to tell the federal government what they can do with the edict on high from King Barry. And it will be very interesting to see what kind of fallout there is from this, because it's going to start at a local level. I think if you look to your local school districts to see what the reaction of parents are, what the reaction of teachers and administrators, in the case of administrators, they don't want to lose that federal money. So they're going to be kind of in between a rock and a hard place. They're going to want to do what the higher ups in the district tell them to do, and you know, go along with things because they don't want to lose that federal money. But you also have to answer to parents, and the parents, I think there's going to be kind of a domino effect. Parents are going to complain to teachers, principals, that kind of thing. And if there is enough backlash, those teachers are going to go to their higher ups, the teachers, the principals, and say, look, we're catching a lot of heat for this. And so I think it's going to be very interesting to see how much pushback there is going to be from this, because I think there's going to be a lot. And maybe not so much in places like New York, California, are very traditionally liberal, but I think it's going to be interesting to see what maybe what goes on in places down south. Like I said, I think I saw already this morning that Texas is telling the federal government what they can do with this with this latest decree. But it's going to be interesting to see what I think what other said places in the south, places where things like this, they don't like being told what to do, and there's going to be some pushback on it. But quickly before I have to take a break, I'll just get into this just a little bit. Of course, we had the West Virginia and Nebraska primaries this week. And on the Democrat side, it really was no surprise that, Bernie Sanders ran away with West Virginia. He didn't just beat Hillary Clinton. He pretty much trounced her. Let's see. I have a report here from CNN. And I believe it was about a 51. I'm thinking that the numbers I saw were Bernie Sanders got 51% of the vote to Hillary Clinton's 36. And, you know, you really don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out why that happened. And there's, you know, for all the people, all the liberals and all the Democrats who want to go on and on about the chaos going on in the Republican Party, there is just as much going on in the Democrat Party, because you've got Bernie Sanders winning primary after primary after caucus after primary, but yet Hillary Clinton is getting all the delegates. She's getting all those superdelegates. And again, what happened in West Virginia on Tuesday, it really doesn't take – it's a no-brainer. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that if you inform people that one of your ultimate goals is to not only put your place of employment out of business, but by putting your place of employment out of business, your ultimate goal also is in turn to put those individuals out of business and put them out of work. And so I'm not sure what the Clinton people were expecting, because we heard about a week prior to the West Virginia primary, we heard Hillary Clinton, we heard her back in March during a debate, and she was very clear on what she wanted to do. her almost exact quote was, "We're going to put a lot of coal companies and a lot of coal miners out of business." Again, West Virginians, I think, are not going to say, "Hey, maybe we're not the sharpest knives in the drawer, but we know what we heard. We know what she said." And of course, we saw that she tried to spin it and say that it was taken out of context. And, well, no, it wasn't. So I think that, again, it's a no-brainer that if you tell people that your ultimate intention, and you make no bones about it, because she did not, you make no bones about the fact that you are going to put people out of work, chances are they're not going to vote for you. So, again, not sure what the Clinton people were thinking, but I am going to take a short break. We are going to come back. We'll talk more about West Virginia and Nebraska and Donald Trump and what it all means on the Republican side. And plus, I've got, like I said, I have got such a stack here. I could go on. I could go on for 2 hours today. But again, I'm going to take a break. I've got lots to get to, so stay right where you are. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. I will be right back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble, TGIF, people. The weekend is upon us. Finally. Yes, it is. In addition, a little housekeeping here very quickly. In addition to our current broadcast right now, you can go to later on today, I believe at 2 p.m. Central Time, to conservativeradionetwork.com and listen to a rebroadcast. And you can also listen to it tomorrow, also same time, I believe, 2 p.m. Central Time. That is conservativeradionetwork.com. Please go there. There are a ton of great shows by a ton of great people, and there's so much going on there. So please check it out. And there's two different schedules there. You have the Liberty schedule and you have the Justice schedule. Conservative Cauldron Radio is on the Justice schedule. So please check it out. Plus, like I said, check out everybody else that's there, because there's a ton of great shows there. We are talking about, of course, the West Virginia and Nebraska primaries. And I've got a report here from CNN. It's really a good piece here. It's called Five Takeaways from West Virginia and Nebraska. And we were talking about how it's kind of a no-brainer that when Hillary Clinton told the coal miners that she was going to put them out of business, chances are they weren't going to vote for her. Wait a minute. I thought Hillary was supposed to be such an experienced and savvy politician. Well, if that's the case, why didn't she know that? What exactly were the Clinton people thinking? And one of the things here, it says that West Virginia doesn't like Hillary Clinton. She defeated Barack Obama there in 2008, but she didn't even come close this year. I believe the number that I heard last night was 200,000, 300-something thousand votes for her back in 2008. And I think this past Tuesday she got 85,000, 86,000. It's really – Bernie Sanders won handily in nearly every demographic, according to the exit polls. He fared very strongly among many voters who are concerned with the economy, and, of course, won big margins in coal industry households. You think? I don't know. I don't know about anybody else, but if somebody tells me they're going to put me out of work, chances are I'm not going to vote for them. But Hillary did try to, again, she did try to spin the whole, we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business remark. She tried to spin it and say it was all taken out of context, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, that didn't help her. Again, people are not – Hillary Clinton, the dirty little secret is that Hillary Clinton really doesn't give a damn about coal miners or West Virginians in general, because she thinks they're just a bunch of hillbillies. And she knows that her – largest voting base is going to be with minorities. I'm not sure what the African American population or any other minorities, Hispanic, what have you. I'm not sure what the numbers on those populations are in West Virginia, but I don't think it's very big. So you know, West Virginia is just full of white people, so she doesn't give a damn about that. They're not going to vote, especially those hillbilly coal miners. They're not going to vote for her. So I think that's the dirty little secret, is that she really doesn't care. But and not only that, but nearly 40% of West Virginia Democrat voters say that they want the next president to be less liberal than Barack Obama. And about 40% of them are saying that they in a Trump Hillary Clinton Donald Trump matchup, that they would not vote for Hillary Clinton, that they would cross over and vote for Donald Trump. And again, one of the things here is warning signs for Hillary, and that, like I was just saying, her advisors are studying the opinions of white working class voters, like the ones in West Virginia. Again, this goes on to say she doesn't need them to win, but they would like her advisors want to see some improvement in her standing with those white working class voters, because right now, at least in West Virginia, they really don't like her. And they also would like her to focus on getting her base more revved up, more excited, because I think another dirty little secret, if you turn on any of the mainstream media, they're going to try to tell you how much her base is so excited and how they're revved up, and they're so excited that Hillary Clinton is running, and they're so excited that they want her to be the president. Well, if that's the case, how come Bernie Sanders is winning, you know, primary after primary after primary, and he's the crowds that he's getting again, none of this was supposed to happen. Hillary Clinton was just supposed to just sail right to the nomination. And now this old curmudgeonly commie socialist guy is getting in her way. And none of that was supposed to happen. And Bernie says he's there. Bernie says he's not going anywhere, that he's there to stay. And he knows that the math is against him, but he's not letting that bother him. And again, that's another thing, another one of these takeaways here is that the math is against him. And it says here that West Virginia only had 29 Democratic delegates take 30 Tuesday night. By winning the primary, he did win some, but I don't know that he won enough to, you know, really make a difference, make a dent in this. Here, what I was just saying about the minority population in West Virginia, it says West Virginia's demographics helped him as well. 91% of voters were white. That's according to the exit polls. And that won't be the case in delegate-rich states like California and New Jersey, who vote on June 7th. Coming up on the, I believe it is the 17th, which will be next Tuesday, we have the Kentucky Democrat primary and we have the Oregon primary. You know, at this point, there's really no, you know, no secret. I think we pretty much know what the matchup is going to be. Another one of these things here is that Republicans are not unified yet. And but again, there's a lot of Democrat voters who are saying that they will no way vote for Hillary Clinton, that if they have to, they will cross over and vote for Donald Trump, who won West Virginia Tuesday night. He also won Nebraska. There really was not a whole lot of protest vote, because here's the deal with that, is that in the remaining states who have yet to vote, Ted Cruz is and quite possibly John Kasich are still on the ballot. So you can quite easily it's quite plausible that people can cast votes for Cruz and or Kasich in the remaining states, which at this point would be looked on as protest votes. It says here there was not a lot of that going on in either West Virginia, Nebraska, or Nebraska Tuesday night. And actually in West Virginia, Ted Cruz got about – no, I'm sorry, this was in Nebraska – roughly 19% of the vote. And, you know, it's I see why Cruz people would do that. They're still ticked off. They're still angry. And, you know, that's another thing that we're going to talk about here in a minute is about the Republican Party uniting. And it says the vast majority of GOP voters expect Trump to beat Hillary Clinton. That's not what a lot of polls are saying. But again, there was a Quinnipiac poll that came out this week that says otherwise. It was still in the margin of error. But I think that we are June, July, August, September. We're still 6 months out from the election. And that in politics, 6 months is an eternity. So much can happen in 6 months. So right now in May, in the middle of May, while all of the polls are saying what they're saying, there may be starting to be some very slow turnaround to those polls. And again, it says the vast majority of GOP voters expect Trump to beat Hillary Clinton in the general election. One in five Republican voters in Nebraska said they won't vote for either one this fall. And I hear a lot of that too. And in fact, I have stated on this program that I have looked at the Libertarian Party website. I'm very interested in what they have to say because this primary has just been like no other, I think, at least in my lifetime, and probably a lot of other people's too. And just the back and forth and the hatred and the vitriol between both sides, between the Trump people and the Cruz people, really turned me off to both. And because, well, for a lot of reasons, but and I don't believe that I'm the only person in the nation that has happened to. And again, if you Google it, you go on the internet, there are places all over. The Libertarian Party, the Constitution Party, is saying that they've had a huge spike in their membership, in people going on their websites to find out more about them. And we may see more of that. And I think once this election cycle is over, regardless of who wins, I think that there is going to be some exodus of the Republican Party, because people are going to say, you know what, that's the last time I want to deal with any of that. And so they're going to go other places, and they're going to look for different alternatives, whether or not yet another party emerges. You know, anything can happen. Anything can happen, especially in politics, and usually does. But finally, the last point here on this CNN piece is that the exit polls on both sides, both Democrats and Republicans, show an electorate that is hungry for a shakeup in Washington. Among Democrats in West Virginia, only 27% said they want a candidate who continues Obama's policies. In both states, more than 90% of Republican voters said that they were angry or dissatisfied with the federal government. And more than 6 in 10 Republicans in Nebraska said they had felt betrayed by GOP politicians. And so this is definitely the year of the outsider. I don't think that's no longer an arguable point. And using that point here, on Thursday, the presumptive GOP nominee, Donald Trump, had a meeting with Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, and it was a first-time face-to-face meeting for them, and so that they could talk about what needs to be done within the Republican Party as it relates to unifying people and bringing people together and trying to rid the party of some of this, like I just said, some of the just out and out hatred and vitriol on both sides from both Trump people and Cruz people. And the statement put out by both of them, both Trump and Ryan, said that they felt it was a positive step towards unifying the party. And they went on to say, quote, "With that focus, we had a great conversation this morning. While we were honest about our few differences, we recognize that there are also many important areas of common ground. This was our first meeting, but it was a very positive step towards unification." So that was, I mean, it's encouraging. I don't think there's anybody that wanted it to go badly. Speaker Ryan went on to say, quote, "This is our first meeting. I was very encouraged with this meeting, but this is a process. It takes some time. You don't put it together in 45 minutes. By all accounts, everyone in the room thought that things went very well, that it was very positive. And this is a report from Newsmax. It says that polls are suggesting that Republican voters are getting behind Trump, who effectively clinched the nomination last week. GOP lawmakers are increasingly calling for the party to end its embarrassing bout of infighting and unite to beat Hillary Clinton. And Reince Priebus, who is the chairman of the Republican National Committee, also said that the meeting was great. It was productive, and they talked about a lot of things. And you know, one of the things I thought was interesting too was that Paul Ryan kind of came out and admitted that, and this was a quote from him. He said, quote, "We come from different wings of the party. The goal here is to unify the various wings of the party around common so that we can go forward to unify it." He also said, "We can always have differences. If you agree on 70%, that's always a lot." And I've heard people say a lot of times that, well, first of all, I don't think that you're going to agree with the candidate of your choice on every single thing, every single time. If you do, I don't know. I there has never, ever in my lifetime been a candidate that I have voted for that I agreed with them on every single thing. I just don't know that happens. I've heard a lot of conservatives say that for them, if they can agree with a candidate on 7 out of 10 things, they find that doable. I tend to agree with that. Some people may not. Some people may want 8 or 9. Some people are fine with 5 or 6. It, you know, but you know, obviously you have to have a majority of things that you agree with on someone to support them. But, But again, I don't think that you are going to agree. You're not going to agree with all the people all the time, basically. And so their meeting yesterday was productive by all accounts, like I said. It says almost 2 in 3 Republican leading voters now view Donald Trump favorably, compared with 31% who view him unfavorably. That is according to a national Gallup poll that was taken last week. And it says that the numbers, those numbers represent an almost total reversal from the survey that was taken in March that asked the same question. Donald Trump also had other meetings yesterday, three of them, the one obviously with Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, and the party chairman Reince Priebus. Then he was going to, they were going to meet with some other House GOP leaders and some of the Senate majority, Senate leaders, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. So I think it's a good first step. I think I have to agree. I think at the end of the day, once July rolls around and convention time rolls around, that the ultimate goal, and I think a lot of people, I think I'm going to pick, if that's what you want to call it, I'm going to pick on the Cruz, some of the Cruz people for just a minute. I think that maybe some of them have lost sight of who the ultimate opponent is. And that ultimate opponent is Hillary Clinton. And I will use a quote here from this report from Newsmax that I was just talking about. This great nation cannot endure 8 more years of Democrat control of the White House. And that was a statement from GOP chairs of 7 House committees that put out a joint statement Wednesday night about Donald Trump's campaign. It is paramount that we coalesce around the Republican nominee, Mr. Donald J. Trump. And also Representative Tom Cole of Oklahoma, he is a leading lawmaker in the GOP leadership. He said he made a prediction, and he said that Hillary Clinton will unify Republicans like nobody's business. And he's being kind of tongue-in-cheek about it, but you would think that that would. You would think that that a possible Hillary Clinton presidency, no matter who you supported, no matter whether you are a Trump supporter, a Cruz supporter, if you're a Ben Carson, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush supporter, a very potential Hillary Clinton presidency ought to scare the bejesus out of you. And you may think that Donald Trump is the most vulgar Neanderthal that you have ever run across, but at some point, you know, I think that maybe people need to ask a very hard question for some people. I get that. That you have to ask yourself, is any single thing that Donald Trump did, you know, forget all of the Nazi insinuations and fascist and all of that crap that some people are putting out, because that's what it is. It's crap. And put that aside, is there really, seriously, in your heart, in your mind, in your gut, is there anything that Donald Trump can do that would be as bad as Hillary Clinton? Is Donald Trump going to appoint more liberal judges than Hillary Clinton? No, he's not. And I don't believe, you know, you may disagree with Donald Trump on every single thing there is, but I do not get the feeling that Donald Trump is a man who despises his country. I do get that feeling about Barack Obama. I sort of get that feeling about Hillary Clinton, that she is a man who sort of despises her country. Okay, I'm just kidding around. But, you know, I think that a lot of times with Democrats, They think that America is the problem. They think that America is not a force for good in the world, and that America, for some reason, be it our past sins of slavery and maybe the way that we have treated other minorities, Native Americans, that we need to be brought down a peg or two. Donald Trump doesn't think that, and that is what is drawing people to him. Donald Trump is not ashamed of being an American. So, you know, and I think that we can, you know, we all remember that quote from a certain first lady who said that for the first time in her adult life, she was proud to be an American. Donald Trump has always been proud to be an American. And I don't believe for one second that he is a man who despises his country. So, you know, people are going to have to look within themselves, I guess, and at the risk of sounding melodramatic, look within themselves and ask themselves some tough questions about what they want to do this November. I'm going to take another quick break. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you again so much for hanging out with me today. I still got a ton of stuff to get to. I'm going to have to start a stack of stuff, I think. Anyway, don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Never knew how much I love you. Never knew how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me. Fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, fever all through the night.
Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I light up when you call my name, and you know I'm gonna treat you right. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, I'll fever all through the night.
Everybody's got the fever. Oh, that's just something that you should know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, tell about it.
Romeo loved Juliet.
Uh-huh.
Juliet, she felt the same. When he put his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my flame. I'll give it fever.
Fever, 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 yeah.
When we kiss it, fever without failing you.
Oh, fever,
I'm a fire. Fever, yeah, I burn it for soon.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble, TGIF. Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with me on this fabulous Friday morning. And like I said, of course, please go to later on today at 2 p.m. Central Time. You can go to conservativeradionetwork.com and hear a rebroadcast. And also tomorrow afternoon, again, 2 p.m. Central Time, conservativeradionetwork.com. There's a ton of great stuff there and a ton of great people. So please check it out. Here's the poll, the Quinnipiac poll that I was just talking about couple of minutes ago that actually puts Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton neck and neck, and in certain cases slightly ahead. And it kind of puts that whole Hillary wins in a landslide thing, you know, it kind of puts it into question here. But very quickly, I'll go over a little bit of this here. This would be for a general election in Florida. Clinton at 43%, Trump 42%. Should Bernie Sanders become the nominee, he would be at 44% to Trump's 42%. In Ohio, Donald Trump edges Hillary Clinton 43-39. With Bernie Sanders, he gets 43% to Trump's 41%. In Pennsylvania, Hillary Clinton at 43%, Trump 42%. While Bernie Sanders would lead Trump 47-41, so those are interesting. It's I think it's also interesting that they put Bernie Sanders into the mix. In Florida, 48-35% lead among women for Hillary Clinton. Trump's 49-36% lead among men. Independents were divided by 39-39 between Trump and Clinton. Younger voters, 18 to 30 years old, back Clinton 49-27, while voters over 65 back Donald Trump. On the economy, it's people who are worried about the economy. 54-40% would back Donald Trump. Terrorism, 49-43 would back Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton, those who are most worried about terrorism. Intelligence, voters say 52-38% that Hillary Clinton is more intelligent than Donald Trump. 46-41 say that she has higher moral standards. I don't even know where those people came from. Clinton has the temperament to handle international crisis. Florida voters say 54-44. Trump does not. Let's see. In Ohio, men, Trump 51-37. Women, Clinton 43-36. White voters, Republican 49-32. Non-white voters, Democrat 76-14. Younger, Clinton over Trump 43-39. Voters over 65, Trump over Clinton 46-40. Independents, Trump over Clinton 40-37. Now that's key because, you know, all of those talking heads will tell you that the independent vote is the one that is the most that you want the most. On the economy, Trump over Clinton 52-40. Terrorism, Trump over Clinton 48-43. Pennsylvania, men, Trump 54-33. Women, 51-32. White voters, Republican 48-37. Non-white, Democrat 74-14. It's running about the same. It's all of these polls. I would urge you to go to Newsmax. The title of this is Quinnipiac, Trump Clinton Neck and Neck, Sanders Slightly Ahead, and it is a piece by Sandy Fitzgerald, so please check it out because it's very interesting. It's very telling. Also here, of course, we had Facebook this week, people coming out, former employees saying that, and this was from a report from the blog site called Gizmodo, that Facebook is, they are censoring conservative news and information. I saw this morning that Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO and founder of Facebook, says he is going to meet with some conservatives to hash this out. We will see what happens there. But I don't think it was really any surprise to people. You know, you go on Facebook enough and see what happens. I have something here from FBI Director James Comey about the Ferguson effect, but this is a little teaser. Maybe we'll talk about this next week because we do have to wrap up here a little early for the Conservative Radio Network people. So very quickly. Yes. Does the prospect of a Donald Trump presidency make you want to move to Canada? Well, now you can, or at least you can try to find a nice Canadian to help you live there. A new dating site says it will help you find a Canadian partner to, quote, make dating great again. Maple Match makes it easy for Americans to find the ideal Canadian partner to save them from the unfathomable horror of a Trump presidency. It is not clear if the website is real or a joke, as it is not currently matching North American pairs. There is a waitlist button and a pre-written tweet sharing information about the site. Look for a hashtag Canadian to shack up with in case of a hashtag Trump victory. Join the movement at Maple Match, the tweet reads. So if you are if you're afraid that Donald Trump is going to be the president, and that will mean that you are looking for love in all the wrong places, and you want to head up north where they say go in through the outdoor or things like that, there you go. Maple Match, at Maple Match. With that, I am out of here. Everyone have a fantastic weekend. Please go to politichicks.com and conservativecauldron.blogspot.com. There will be some new material there shortly for your consideration and perusal. Please go to facebook.com/BeckyNoble and, of course, on Twitter at Patriot Witch. And again, please check out conservativeradionetwork.com later on today at 2 p.m. Central Time. And again, tomorrow at 2 p.m. Central Time. Again, everyone have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you next time.